Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and you're listening to episode 22 of Art for Your Ear. As usual, I'm happy to say that this episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. All right, today I'm talking to Kate Bingham Burt. Wow, I got it on the first try. She's an associate professor of design, and she also happens to be a self-taught, very successful illustrator. Her interview in my book, Creative Block, shameless plug, was one of my favorites. It was full of insightful gems, and the only thing that was really missing was her hilarious, awesome laugh. So, thank goodness for audio interviews. Ready? Let's call Portland. Hi!
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
This is the first time we've ever actually talked to each other.
I know!
That's so weird. I think it'll be okay with no headphones.
Okay, well, we'll try it. Seems like the connection's pretty good, so that's good. And I'm actually, you'd laugh at me if you could see where I'm at right now. I'm in my office and I'm like hunched down in the corner of my office, like where I think like the quietest place will be, because I've got like this big window in my office that's right along the street. And so I'm just like, I think this will be fine.
Well, I appreciate your dedication to the quality.
But then I'm like, oh no, I forgot my headphones.
It actually sounds really good. I think we're good.
Okay, great. That's awesome.
And I'm tucked away in a little pillow fort, so it all works. I've got pillows, fluffy pillows on either side of me, and then I drape a fitted sheet over the whole thing.
Oh my God. You know, I know that this is an audio podcast, but it'd be funny to have the actual video of both of us.
I know.
And like the contorted weird positions we placed ourselves so we could have like smooth sounding audio.
I know. I just did an interview with somebody else the other day and she was going to do video and she turned her video on and I'm in like this weird thing. Like there's a sheet actually on my head. And I was like, yeah, no, we're not doing video.
That's awesome.
You do what you have to do, right?
You do. You totally do. Well, I'm so excited that you asked me to be a part of this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so happy. I had you on my list from the very beginning, but I thought, especially when school started, I thought, oh, she's going to be so busy and she's not. And I couldn't believe you wrote back and said yes.
Oh, of course.
So I'm so excited. So are you between classes right now or are you done for the day?
The way it is, my Wednesdays are my – so actually, long story short, I have a new position at school. I'm starting my eighth year as an associate professor of graphic design at Portland State University. But last year, I was asked to be the associate director of the Art and Design School. And so that means that I actually teach a little less, but I have more kind of like office – admin days, more meetings, things like that. So I don't actually teach on Wednesdays, but I'm in between meetings right now. So it's perfect. This whole new position is kind of one of those things where when it was first approached to me, it made me initially kind of like, oh my God, that sounds kind of terrifying. I'm not quite sure that I really know what I would be doing, but then I'm also like, well, that actually sounds like a challenge too. And that actually, I kind of want to learn a little bit more about arts administration and curriculum development and good advising strategies. And then just also, I'm also dealing with a lot more kind of community outreach and community partnerships and event organization too. And so it's fun. It's a good challenge. And I'm like, this is my third week into it.
Oh my God.
It's very fresh. But I really like it, so it's good.
Good for you. You always seem like you're up for a challenge. You seem like that kind of person.
Oh, well, thank you. I like to try to keep things interesting and moving forward, and different situations and just trying to figure out different things and like good ways to make things happen. So.
That's awesome. That's very inspiring. I love change, but then I am scared of change at the same time.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, of course, oh my goodness. That's always pretty terrifying.
I know, but it's good to push yourself out of those zones. So you have your new job. Do you have time to make art?
Well, I'm right now. Good question. I am determined to find time during the week where I can go to my studio and not be at school. Because currently, right now, I am just kind of doing the weekend and the occasional night thing, but I'm still trying to figure out my schedule here at school to see where I can actually go. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, the way where school is positioned to my studio, it's really easy to go back and forth, which is fantastic. And I feel like it's very doable for me to, like this, just for example, yesterday I had a client meeting here in town and I was able to just hop on the train and go to my studio, and it took like 10 minutes to get to my studio, and I had the meeting at my studio, and then I was able to come back to school. And just being able to have that freedom to be able to remove myself, do a meeting in my, you know, my illustration space, and then come back to school and be in my school space was pretty liberating. I really am happy to have that flexibility to be able to go back and forth.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So thanks, Portland Public Transit System. I love you. And it really, it's a brand new thing too. It's a new train line that just opened in September. And
just for you.
I know. I really do feel quite special because it drops off right at my studio and it drops off right at my office at school.
It's wow. Pretty, the universe is looking out for you.
It really is. And the color of the line is orange, and orange is one of my favorite colors. So I do, I'm pretty appreciative of the Portland Public Transit System here.
That is awesome. So I want to step back a little in time, because okay. I know all this stuff about you, and lots of people know you because of obsessive consumption, mm-hmm. and when all that stuff went crazy for you a couple of years ago. And so, did you go to school for art, or did you go for graphic design? I think you're a self-taught illustrator.
I don't know. Self-taught illustrator. I went to school, actually. I really wanted to be a broadcast journalist. So I was a communications major, and long story short, I didn't like it. And then I ended up being an English major. And I actually completed that major. I loved being an English major. Oh my goodness. If I could be an English major for the rest of my life, if being an English major were a were a profitable career, I would be just an English major.
But I just said to my husband, actually, I wonder if I could get a job watching Chopped. Like, that would be such, I'd be so good at that job.
Oh, so good. Right?
So you could be an English major, and yes. I would watch Chopped, and we would just, like, the money would just roll in.
If you figure that out, let me know.
Okay.
We can both start working on that. But no, like, it was, like, I really do feel like my some of my most favorite times were just being in my English classes and being with this, like, handful of just, like, really smart students who were also turned to be my really good friends. And we loved to argue, and we loved to challenge each other. And we would just sit there and, like, just go back and forth and just, like, tear apart essays and poems. And just, it was so much fun. And then the conversation would carry outside of the classroom into, like, you know, a bar. I mean, it was just like, if I could just sit there and, like, I would love to just sit with a group of friends and dissect articles and argue and talk about poems and laugh. And it was just like, if I could do that for the rest of my life, I would. But anyway, I couldn't. I finished that major. And then towards the end of my English major, I was also an art minor during that time too, but I mostly was just hanging out in the ceramics studio, because again, that's where all I found, like, where all the interesting people at the time were working. And I just wanted to be around really interesting people, either just to, like, listen to their conversations or to participate in the conversations. And so I was just in the ceramic studio all the time. And that we had also gotten a new graphic design professor during that time, and he was trying to recruit people for his classes. And so he came down to the ceramic studio, and he convinced me to take a graphic design class. And then I just fell in love, and my art minor went to an art major. And that's how that happened. So I'm a double major in graphic design and English.
Okay.
And yeah. So I stayed a little longer than most people.
All those interesting conversations.
I know.
And so when did the illustration kick in? So did you go off and get a job as a graphic designer when you finished?
I did. I went off and I got a job as a graphic designer. I moved to Omaha, Nebraska, and I was this 22-year-old fresh college grad, and I basically was thrown into the fire of this in-house graphic design job for this rapidly growing gift company. So this is the late 90s, early 2000s. And I was doing all packaging for candles and potpourri and food packaging. And then I was also doing the trade show circuit. And I happened to be also one of their salespeople too. So I would design all the stuff, and I would also design the trade show booths. And then because I was a very disposable, easily transportable person, they would send me all over the country to also act as their sales rep. And so I spent a long time in trade shows and merchandise marts and just doing that circuit for a couple years. And that was really wild. But it also, that's kind of where my fascination with consumer culture really kind of kicked off, because I was watching this insane kind of market economy of trade shows and trends and store owners just being rabid for the next big thing to stock in their stores. And it was just very kind of odd, false, constructed environment that I was immersed in. And I was by myself, and I wasn't really happy with that job, but I didn't really know what to do. But I knew I wanted to make work about this insane world of consumption and why we buy the things that we buy and why we make the emotional decisions and that we do when it comes to objects and things. And so that's when I applied for graduate school. And I spent the next 3 years kind of exploring these different topics. And more of my rule-based projects really started. And but I didn't start drawing until I did my credit card statement project, where I was about $24,000 in credit card debt. And I made a system of rules for myself that I was going to draw every single statement until they were paid off. And I picked drawing because at that point of time, I really considered that my least favorite way of working. And so it was a form of punishment for me, just writing, "I will not talk in class," on a chalkboard over and over
really?
Again.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And so I had to take a couple drawing classes because I was an art major, right? So of course you have to take drawing. But I had, and this also plays into me being a teacher too, because I feel like every teacher reacts against a terrible teacher that they had and tries to emulate a really good teacher that they had, because we all have those experiences, a teacher that's so inspiring and so challenging and so kind of transformative. And then you have those teachers that you can just tell that are really just completely checked out. And you're just kind of like, what's happening here? This is so weird. Well, that was my drawing teacher. He was, and I was also a shitty kid too. I mean, I was 20 and I was like, this guy's not trying. I'm like, well, if you're not trying, I'm not going to try. And you know what? Drawing's kind of hard and it's not coming to me as easily as other things are. And so I'm not really going to put effort into this. And so I'm going to skip this class. I don't care. I hate this. And so it was really terrible. I was a bad student and he was a bad teacher.
And it's led you to a giant career.
Yeah, exactly. And so at that point when I was starting the credit card project, I was like, well, I hate drawing and I hate the fact that I'm...
Were you already out of school when you started that?
Yes. I had just started my first, I was teaching, I had my first professorship appointment at Mississippi State University. Okay. So I was already out of school and I had like my quote unquote real job. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I still am not able to pay off my credit cards. This is insane. And something really needs to be done about it. And I had just finished all of these projects where I was, you know, I had one project where I photo documented everything that I purchased for 28 months and, you know, shared it online and like created this whole weird world about, you know, my purchases and other people's purchases. But yet I was embarrassed and I couldn't tell people that I had this pile of credit card statements that I just was making me sick every single month. And I couldn't talk to real humans at credit card companies to like lower my APR. I felt completely hopeless. And I know a lot of people feel like that too with debt and money. And people don't like to talk about money and people don't like to talk about, you know, how much they owe or how much they make. It's still like, we exist in a world where we share so much information online, but money is still such a taboo topic and it's such an emotionally charged topic. And when I felt like though I had to make myself accountable to other people with this project to tell people that I was doing this, whether they cared or not, because I know if I just did this project and didn't tell anyone, I wouldn't do it. Yeah. You know, it really had to be about like, hey, whether you like it or not, friends, family, internet, I'm going to be, you know, number one, I'm this much money in debt. And number two, here are all my hand-drawn credit card statements.
That is so crazy. And is that when everything kind of went crazy for you?
Well, it wasn't until 2 years into the credit card statement. Cause at that point I was very comfortable at that point making work about design, about marketing, about consumer culture. And I wasn't, and cause I was working at a university and they completely, supported, me doing gallery shows, me doing, you know, credit card drawings, like all that type of quote unquote, like consumer research essentially. And I didn't have a client based product. I didn't have a client based practice. And so, and I was okay with that. I was really okay with that. But about 2 years into the credit card drawing project, I decided that I actually liked making lines and marks and drawing the logos of the credit card statements. And so I decided to start my daily purchase drawing project because I wanted to draw something else other than my dumb credit card statements. And so in February of 2006, I started drawing something that I purchased every day. And I made monthly zines out of the purchases and I sent them out to people. I used those as my business cards instead of actual business cards. And then I also I had like a TypePad blog at the time and I uploaded them to TypePad too. And in about 2007 is when art directors and you know, they started contacting me, inquiring if I would do illustration work too. And
so what did you think when they said that, considering how much you hated drawing before this?
Well, at that point I was actually really stoked. I was like, this is great. Like this is accidental illustration career started for me. And again, like I'm so thankful for, I think it was just, again, like the audience that I had started when I did. So like in 2002 is when I started doing all of the, where I photographed everything that I purchased and started obsessive consumption. Really. That's where obsessive consumption started. Mm-hmm. And I had a very small, but very supportive audience for that. And then, but I also used Flickr pretty heavily when it first came out in 2004, I guess. And so then I put all my credit card statements on that. So it's like I had people saw what I was doing, but I feel like a lot of people that were working as art directors, didn't really know what I could do for them.
Right, right.
Just kind of enjoyed the stuff that I was doing. But then once I started doing, you know, drawings of everyday objects, it was like, oh, then we know what to do with her now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to contact her and see if she could, you know, do this editorial illustration or illustrate this book. Or like I started making work that had a sensible home in the commercial world too. And
isn't that funny? That's like so full circle.
It totally is. It's totally full circle. And again, I could never have planned for that. I don't know. It's just, it's funny. And so, and also too, because of doing gallery shows and, doing all that for several years, one of my very first big illustration projects was with Faith Levine and Handmade Nation, in Princeton Architectural Press, because I had done a show in Faith's gallery in early 2007, and I had just, no, maybe 2006, I forget. I had barely started with the Daily Drawing Project, but I had another big body of work that I was able to showcase. And so when Faith was looking for an illustrator for her book, she was like, well, I want my friend Kate to do this. And
wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. And so then that's how I began. And really, that's how I began my relationship with Princeton Architectural Press, who are the people that have published my last three books that I've done. But they really took a chance on me because here I am, like I was just learning all this stuff as I was going. Like I wasn't sure, like, well, how do I provide illustrations for a book? Like, how does this work? And I tell, you know, I guess I basically did what I just always tell my students to do too. Like, if you don't know something, just ask questions.
Mm-hmm. I know that's so simple, but there's so much ego involved, right? You want to act like you already know the answer.
Yeah. And it's just like, you just ask questions and be nice and deliver stuff on time and see what else you can do, you know? And so I had a really wonderful time. And the job with Princeton Architectural Press too, I mean, it was all pro bono, you know? It was like one of those instances too, where it's like, I'm not going to ask for money for this because this is a big opportunity for me. And again, like, that's why I think everyone should get paid for, you know, work that they do. But then sometimes that's so black and white. That's such a black and white attitude to have too, because really I feel like with some jobs where they're taking a big chance on you. Mm-hmm. And if you knock that out of the park, that actually is going to be really beneficial down the line. And so I was completely fine doing that, you know, just, and also Faith was a good friend of mine. Like, I really completely believed in that project. I love Handmade Nation.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to put a link to it in this. I write a post with every podcast.
Yeah.
And it's such a good film. I'm going to put a link to it. It's such a good film.
And that entire, I saw Faith work her ass off on that film. And it was such a labor of love for her. And it was her first film too. And I feel like, well, this is my first book illustration. This is her first film. I knew she was not making any money on that. I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and ask for money.
Can you imagine being the jerk that shows up? Well, I'm not going to do it for any less.
Seriously. And so that's why it's like, there's so much gray in everything that we do. And I'm just, again, it was a huge opportunity for me. And again, it really established a very nice relationship with Princeton, you know, down the line too. Mm-hmm. But that was my first big illustration job. And I remember I watched the entire series of Six Feet Under as I was drawing that book.
Now every time you look at that book, do you think of Six Feet Under?
I do.
Me too. If I'm ever working on anything and, like, you know, Dirty Dancing is usually on in the back, and then every time I look at that collage or whatever it is, it's just like, I can't not think of that.
No, I have a few jobs that are like that, but I like that where I'm like, oh, that was, you know, that was when I watched this series or that series. So but Six Feet Under will ever for always be tied to Handmade Nation for me too. But and then also along during that time, then once that book came out, then, you know, it just, it, then everything just kind of snowballs And yeah. it's a great freaking snowball. I love it.
I know, just go for the ride. One thing I wanted to, one of the things that I love that you said earlier, and it's actually one of my favorite quotes because you're in Creative Block, which is so cool.
I love that book, by the way. Thank you so much for including me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for being in it. That's why it's so hilarious that we've never actually talked. But anyway, one of my favorite quotes in the whole book is a quote that I had them do as a pull quote that you said, and it is, "I don't want to break my self-imposed rules. These rules keep me moving and making." And that was huge for me because I think what happens, especially when you go to art school and you're given projects and you're given constraints and you're given rules to play within, once you graduate, sometimes it's just, you know, you're faced with this blank canvas or this blank sheet and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. And I love that that's sort of your way out of a block and your, and actually the way that you work. And so if you can talk a little bit about these, you know, if you can give examples of some of the rules that you set for yourself, or do you, you know, do you tell your students to do the same thing?
I do actually. It's so easy to be so overwhelmed with either ideas or the possibility of all the things that you could do to make that you just, it's paralyzing.
It is.
And and then also too, if at least for me, it works for me, is especially I think when a schedule gets really busy too, you can go, you can be like, oh my gosh, it's been 3 weeks and I haven't made anything because it's just, and then you feel gross. I mean, it's just, it's like, and I am always, trying to fight the gross feeling of not making something. Mm-hmm. and for me right now, I'm currently not doing any rule-based projects, like with a specific concept or theme right now. And that's the first time in over 10 years that I've been without something like that.
Wow. How are you feeling?
It's weird. And I am still like, I, at least for me right now, I at least try to like make just something every day, like whether it's a small drawing on a post-it note, or it's like a page in my sketchbook, or like I have to have that happen for me, or I get sad too, you know, mm-hmm. where, and I think especially it's become that half hour, 40 minutes that I can just claim for myself out of the day too, where it's, and that's become really important to me, where I'm not responding to email, or I'm not, you know, teaching, or I'm not, where it's just me and my pens.
Well, and I think that's a good point too, is that it's half, you know, 30 to 40 minutes. Cause I think people need to know that you can set up these things, self-imposed rules, but it's not like you have to quit your day job now because you've set this project up for yourself. If you can make that window of time for yourself, but it's the rules. Like if you might have that time set aside, but if you have no plan or you have no rules, you don't know what to do in that half an hour, which makes you even grouchier than if you had a plan.
Exactly. And I think that's another thing too, where it's like those, even if it's just a little thing every single day, like that, those little things add up to a lot. They mm-hmm. really do. We exist, we go through so many days. And if you just do one thing a day, and it's not like you have to share all of that with everyone. It's just, it's all part of the process. And those little things lead to bigger things. And those little ideas lead to bigger ideas. And mm-hmm. you can have little great ideas that can blossom into big, great ideas. And you can have little bad ideas that you could just kind of throw away and not have to like worry about too much either, you know? And, but those things all build upon each other because, and I tell this to my students a lot. I teach sophomores and I teach seniors, and I love all of them, but my sophomores especially, because they always, it's just kind of like getting them kind of into the headspace of making piles of stuff and then just sorting it out later. And, just kind of pulling the trigger and giving themselves the permission to make piles of crap.
Oh my God. I love that.
Well, it's like not everything you're going to make is going to be awesome. The majority of the stuff that you make is going to be not awesome, but you know, you've got to make the not awesome stuff because that not awesome stuff is going to yield like a good thing, an awesome thing that is going to build. And then you can keep moving with that and keep growing with that and keep thinking about that too. I feel like we all have a tendency to overthink and then not do. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of thinking while you're making stuff. And
well, yeah, I find when you do that, like sometimes what I've been doing lately is, I block time to make work, but if I'm not in the mood and I don't really know what I'm doing, I do collage. So I'll just sit down with all of my old books and just randomly cut stuff out. Like I have no plan. I don't know. I'm not going to make a collage that day, but I know at some point all of these weird little objects need to be cut perfectly. And while I'm doing that, suddenly I'm like, ooh, this, and like all these like little sparks start flying. And next thing you know, I've done 13 collages when all I was going to do was cut a few things out.
Seriously, busy hands are the best.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, it's like, and that's the whole thing. You keep moving and you keep making. It's like, just as long as you keep making these piles, like good stuff comes from these piles. Mm-hmm.
And how do your students handle that? Like, I know when I was a student, it was all, oh, I want A pluses. And perfection was so big to me, which is probably why I had such a hard time being an art student because perfection is impossible. And so do you find that they, especially the sophomores, do they roll with that, or can you feel like that they're like, oh no, it's got to be perfect?
Well, definitely yes. And they're also, it's this culture of being very focused on letter grades.
Right.
And I completely blame K through 12 schooling on this because, I really try to manage expectations when we talk about grades. And I try to manage expectations on what progress really is. And progress isn't like getting a 91 on a project. I mean, that's just like, it's so arbitrary.
Yeah. It's so arbitrary. I know.
And I am always like, I'm like, you guys, if you demonstrate to me that you are fully participating, that you are persistent in your desire to, you know, iterate, redo, look at things, ask lots of questions, look at more things, be basically like this giant sponge for visual culture, guess what? You are going to improve and you are going to be making such better work at the end of this class than you were when you entered the doors.
How do I sign up for your class? That sounds awesome. I'm just going to go back to school.
But it's like, I see this time and time again. It's like, it's always this, like, if the students are doing that, if they commit to just diving in to be a fully, to be a participant in their own education, they're going to do well. They're going to be moving forward. But I think it's that kind of that mind shift of that you actually have to be an active participant in this education system that you have entered. Mm-hmm. You can't wait for people to like tell you what to do. Oh, don't forget you've got to do this thing. Or like you've got to have that. You've also got to be aware and you've got to be awake and you've got to be asking questions too. And this is your education. You have ownership over it. What do you want to do with it? Mm-hmm. And once that switch flips, it's kind of hard to turn that off.
Yeah, that must be exciting to watch.
It is. It's really.
I have one question that I loved your answer again in Creative Block about this. And I wanted, before we go, I really want to ask you about this because this comes up a lot with self-taught people. Well, and people who have MFAs and BFAs and all sorts of things. But did you ever have, maybe in your illustration more than your artwork, did you ever have the inner critic thing, like that imposter syndrome? Like, oh my God, I'm not actually an illustrator. I'm tricking everyone.
I live that. I do. I mean, I think it's natural. And I talk about this with my students too, but I think it's natural for everyone to have that voice to be like, I really don't know what's going on. And I am going to be found out. And soon, you know, someone who's like, a real illustrator or a real designer is going to be like, I'm revoking your illustrator designer card because you are a complete imposter. But I also realize I feel like everyone feels like that.
Yeah. When did you figure that out? Have you always known that?
Only just recently, I think. But yeah. But I think it's also, it's again, like I love teaching so much, and I think it's just hearing just kind of the collective feelings of my students year after year after year. They all have these similar feelings. And I remember, I mean, and we all have this. And I feel like the more we talk about it, the more we can kind of like tell our inner asshole to shut up too, you know? But it's like, but I also think it's good to have that feeling too, because that keeps you moving forward and striving to be better at this thing that you've chosen to do for the rest of your life, hopefully. And it's also, it just, I don't know. I think that's kind of a good thing too.
Yeah, I do too. I just finished my latest book and it's really all about the inner critic. And that was one of the things I was thinking, like, if you can, you know, sometimes it's telling you that because it's your gut and it's actually right. It's got a point, you know, but it just comes out. He's just such an and says it in such a horrible way that it's really hard to take that feedback. But I sort of was thinking about the idea, if you could figure out a way to translate it, you know, and actually go, okay, you know what? This voice is telling me this isn't really right. Maybe it's not, but that doesn't mean quit. That means keep doing what you said, make piles of crap and change its perception because you fight through it. And I just think it's such an interesting discussion. And you're right, like people don't talk about it. And for me, I didn't figure this out. This is so narcissistic. I thought I was the only one in the world that had that little voice.
We all do.
And then when I started writing Jealous Curator, and especially when I did Creative Block and I sent that interview out to all of you guys, you know, people I really admire who I assumed, you know, had it made and never heard that voice and never got blocked. And you guys all came back and said, hell yes.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, I felt like I lost 100 pounds off my shoulders.
Well, and I think that's why it's so important that, again, like it's that people talk to each other too and tell each other these experiences and like talk about their process and talk about kind of like these weird feelings that we have, because really it makes us feel less crazy too.
Yeah, and less alone. We're not alone. I think creative people spend so much time alone in their studios, and that's probably why you loved your English major and the ceramic studio, because you could actually go and talk to people.
Yeah. And that's, I always have gravitated towards people, I guess. But I'm also, I mean, and that's like, I love printmaking. I love ceramics. And I think about that. I love the process of it, but I also love the fact that ceramics and printmaking, like that's not something that you can do by yourself. You know, like you can't really be working in this giant print studio unless you're super rich and you're able to afford all this equipment. And the same thing goes for ceramics too. And so like I was always kind of drawn to that community of making, and I absolutely love like working, even though I'm an illustrator where I work by myself at a desk, like I love like the trade-off, like whenever I work with agencies and get to work on teams or get to work with a lot of different people in order to like bring this really amazing idea to life, something that I would have never have done, been able to have done by myself, like that. I love those experiences too. And I think that's also why I'm drawn to, you know, teaching. I think that's why I'm drawn to like organizing like different like events and things like that, just because I think it's so important that those spaces and places be created so people can meet up and talk to each other and realize that they have all these shared experiences and these shared feelings that they might not have realized had they not ended up in the same space together. Mm-hmm. And so like space making and turning like a space into a really viable place is something that has become a big passion of mine, especially through my role here at school too. Like, how do we make this classroom a better classroom? How do we make this unused space into a place for people to inhabit and to have ideas happen. Space is so very important. And whether that's, you know, organizing a workshop or organizing a lecture series or rearranging a room so it feels better, so people want to be in it. You've got to have that foundation of place so people can come together. And I don't know, that's I think another reason why I said yes to this new role at school too, because that has a lot to do with it. Like, I don't know, it just makes me really excited.
Okay. And here's the follow-up question to all of this.
Yes.
And then we're going to do the speed round.
Okay.
Do you or do you not sleep?
Oh, I sleep.
You seem so busy. You've got so much going on, but you're very, very inspiring. That was awesome.
Thank you. I'm embarrassingly so. I am completely non-functional once it gets past like 9:30.
That's why we're doing this at 2 p.m. I got you at your prime.
Yeah, I am so much. That's been a huge change for me, is that I am not a night person. Like, I can socialize at night, but like me trying to function and like actually do work, no way. I'm a super morning person. And once I finally allowed myself to make my, like, to feel okay, like, it's okay, Kate, that you can't be completely functional at 1 a.m. That was such a huge relief. I'm like, okay, great. I'm just going to be a morning person now.
I know. And you know what I just realized, again, just because I've finally been making and making and making the piles of crap, is that I don't really get going till like 2 or 3 p.m.
Oh, that's great.
And so I would try and make stuff in the morning and it would just all suck. And even like, I'm a graphic designer by day. And I just found that trying to actually like settle in and do work on a big design project, things don't flow for me till 2, 3, 4 PM. And then I could go till 3 AM.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I think that's so important. I always say, I've said this on the podcast a bunch of times, but if you can like really pay attention to when things are flowing, if you're a morning person, great. Do it in the morning. If 3 AM is, you know, when things start happening, do it then and sleep in, you know, like, and it really does make a huge difference if you're actually creating when you're creative.
No, I completely agree. And I think it's so funny because I think that we all have these preconceived notions of ourselves. Like, I'm a night owl. I'm a morning person. And you're like, you want to go, are you really?
Yeah.
Do you really? Like, and then I talk to my students about this too, where they're like, oh, I've just been staying up all night. And I'm like, are you really getting stuff done though? Is that the thing? Like, you're coming in and you're like really proud of the fact that you didn't get any sleep. But I'm like, did you really get anything done? Is this like, where's your best time for productivity? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm a big fan of like, also like doing time tracking too, just to kind of see like how much time you're actually spending on different tasks and if that's like efficient or not. I don't know. I'm a nerd.
I love that you track everything. I think it's hilarious. And it's, you know, I think it's smart and then it leads to art projects. So there you go. I have a really quick speed round to ask you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Your favorite piece of clothing that you had when you were a kid?
Oh my gosh, I had this really amazing cowgirl outfit. It was this like leather, like this brown suede vest, and then these like, it was, and then this brown suede skirt, and then brown cowboy boots.
Do you have a picture of yourself wearing that?
You know, I have to ask my mom.
Okay. If you do, I'm going to put it in the post.
Okay.
Your favorite place to shop?
My favorite place to shop is an office supply store.
Really? I guess there's just so much stuff in there.
There is. And it's like, that's also, it's if I ever like, I don't know, I like to look at office supplies.
Oh my God. Do you enjoy the color coding?
I do. I love all the post-it notes. I love all the highlighters. I like going to an Office Depot. I just like, if I'm stuck on something, I'll just go to Office Depot and look at like sticker labels.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. When my son was little, he is obsessed with color. Oh. And I took him to a sewing shop when he was 2, I think, to get stuff for a Halloween costume. And we only had like 5 minutes on the meter. And we walked down this one aisle and it was this huge aisle just filled with zippers.
Oh my gosh.
And it was organized ombre rainbow from like one end to the other. And he stood there and he said, magenta, hot pink, light pink, rose. He couldn't read. He just knew every color. And we had to stand in this aisle while he named our meter ran out. Like, he was obsessed. So that's what I picture you like at Office Depot.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, I'm like, oh, there's a new color, a new shade of Post-it notes.
Better get them. And then draw them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then the last thing. Have you ever seen or been a naked cyclist in Portland?
I haven't, but I've seen lots of them.
I couldn't believe it when I was in Portland. I saw one and I was like, are they shooting an episode of Portlandia and I'm in it? It's like, nope. There's just a naked cyclist.
My mother-in-law has a talent of booking a trip to Portland over the, like, whenever the naked bike ride happens. And she's done this 3 years in a row. And I'm beginning to think she does it on purpose.
I was gonna say, maybe that's not an accident.
No, I think she does it on purpose. But no, I do think at one point I thought, I'm also someone who thinks that she's showing too much skin if, like, my ankle's showing. So it's like I'm all about layers and lots of, like, coverage. And so
naked cycling for you.
No. I'm very inhibited, I guess. I'm not an uninhibited person. I am like no clothing must touch my body. It has to all hang. But I did think it would be funny. I talked about this. Do you remember there was this children's television show called Slim Goodbody?
No. I'm Canadian, though. So.
You're Canadian. But it was it was like late 70s, early 80s. And it was this, I don't know if it was a PBS station, but anyway, it was this guy who, it was all science and you learn about the body, but he's wearing this flesh colored skin suit.
Oh, no.
That shows all the insides of your body. And I thought it'd be funny to, like, find something like that and just wear that in the naked bike ride. I thought that would be real.
That would be amazing. Put that on your list of creative things to do.
I'll put it on my list. Or just even like a flesh colored suit of, like, just that would have, like, someone else's naked body on the outside of the suit. I mean, that's still basically the same thing as being naked, but it's not me. So.
Oh my God. Please do that. Kate, that's it.
Okay. Awesome.
I'll let you get out from under your desk.
Thank you. And you can emerge from your fort.
my pillow fort studio headquarters.
I love it.
Thank you so much for this. There's so many good nuggets in there, and I'm so excited for everyone to hear this.
Awesome.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to do this.
No, thank you. This was really a lot of fun. I really appreciate you thinking of me and asking me to do this. This is great.
Yay. Mutual Appreciation Club.
Yes, exactly.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon, Kate. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See, so many gems. One of the things that we didn't get to, actually, though, was practical examples of setting rules for yourself and then playing within them. So that can really be whatever you want it to be. Maybe it's that you take one Instagram every day based on a theme, like patterns. Or maybe you decide that for the month of November, you're only going to create using neon pink. That's one of my favorite things to do. It could be that you do one drawing a day, but it has to be on the smallest set of Post-it notes you can possibly find. If you can't think of any, Google it. There are so many of these assignments out there, including 50 in Creative Block. Yes. Another shameless plug. Have fun and make as many piles of crap as you possibly can. Thank you so much to Kate for sharing her stories, to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode, and of course, huge thanks to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.